Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates, plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
Your second edition of Pollock and Thurston in as many days. I am John Pollock from Post Wrestling and representing WrestleNomics. He is Brandon Thurston, a very busy Brandon Thurston. Hello, Brandon.
Hello. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Are you good since last time we spoke?
You know what? It feels like days since we last spoke. We have lots to discuss. We have lots of many questions that are still out there. Maybe we will answer a few of them. And we thought, I want to give ourselves some credit. I mean, we did book this individual to join us where I thought the focus would all be Kazuchika Okada, and few things have trumped that since then. Welcome back to Pollock and Thurston. Dave Meltzer, editor of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter.
Hey, Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Hey, Brandon. Hey, John. How you doing? I'm sure that you guys have gotten tons of sleep the last 2 days.
I guess, Dave, for you, now that we are over 24 hours removed from the announcement, what are some of the key questions you have that are unanswered? There's probably a lot of them as this deal is so fresh.
I mean, it's not so much questions unanswered at this point. I mean, especially because I've talked to a lot of people in the last 24 hours. But I think that the one thing, and Brandon already has written about it, is that the deal from a pure monetary standpoint, forget about, the value of Netflix being on Netflix and things like that. From a pure monetary standpoint, the deal is kind of a disappointment. And not just because they were talking all along of 50% increase, and really the value of this increase is probably closer to 29 to 32%, but more so, that it's a 10-year deal. And, usually, we've gone through these 5-year cycles where the number, greatly increases, by whatever the multiple is, right? Every 5 years. And this one, you're kind of locked into 10 years at this rate. So there's not going to be that big boost in 5 years. This is kind of where you stand. And, it was like when TKO, when they merged, UFC and, the big thing was, when they merged UFC and WWE, the big thing was, that these rights fees are going to continue to just grow like crazy. And this is kind of an admission that that thing, I'm not that it's burst, but a kind of an admission that growth period, that they're not so certain of that growth period, because if they were, this is actually a low deal.
Brandy, did you want to talk a little bit just about kind of your own analysis and breakdown? We talked a bit about this on Tuesday, but just anything you want to add from kind of what you've been able to gather and stock wise from the TKO side.
Yeah. Well, the stock today is only down slightly, which is, I think, fine considering how much it was up yesterday. It was up something like 15 to 20% yesterday, and it's down about 1.5%, which means it's keeping most of the value that it gained yesterday. It's at $88 right now. But I think, I've gone through and did the estimate, and I've seen Brandon Ross's estimate from Lightshed. And we both got to about the same multiple, about 1.2, 1.3, with different methods, which is encouraging. So it tells me that I think over the entire lifetime of the deal, I think it's going to be a 20 to 30% increase. And you can make an argument about the value that WWE is going to gain because of the reach, because of being on Netflix and some other downstream effects that may be there because it's Netflix, especially globally. But it does look like it's a down deal. I have the impression that it's a backloaded deal so that a lot of the money comes later. And I know that's normally the case with these media deals where every year you get a little bit of an increase and they have guaranteed escalators in here. The impression that I get is that that'll be even more the case with this deal because so many of the international rights are going to kick in and go on to Netflix further along, in this deal. But one of the unanswered questions that we have is what's going to happen to Raw in October, November, and December when presumably Raw is no longer going to be on the USA Network and the Netflix deal, Netflix Live on Raw in the United States is not going to start until, January. So I asked NBC Universal and they did get back to me and said, a spokesperson said that it's correct that Raw will no longer be on the USA Network after October 2024. In regard to what is happening with Raw between October and December, it's probably best to reach out to WWE. I did ask WWE. I haven't heard back yet.
Go ahead. I have heard back from WWE, and they basically said that there will be an announcement coming very soon when it comes to that one.
Okay. Do you expect anything? I mean, I would have figured that it's going to just be extended for 3 more months.
On USA, I mean, I don't know. They just said that they would have. They said they couldn't answer it right now, but that answer would be coming very soon.
Okay.
As we look, Dave, to just the overall impact that this is having, certainly outside of WWE, but what this means for Netflix, like this is just a massive sea change. That here is now another significant live sports rights player that is at the table, and what this represents in terms of WWE, that I don't think this is just this is chapter one for Netflix getting into this, not their entire picture of how this is going to play out in terms of now their expansion.
I mean, John, you figure this is like a test thing for them,
yes.
You know, to see how well it does. And, you know, they're kind of like dipping your toe in the water. Now, I know that at their investment call yesterday, they said that they consider this entertainment, and they actually said that it's not a sign they're getting into sports, but it's, you know, one would think it's gotta be, you know, I mean, it's gotta be at least a test. And also because they did kick the tires and make, you know, rounds trying to get Formula One rights and some tennis rights already. So they have talked to people. They just haven't made any deals. This is the first deal they've made. So yeah, that's what I figure. You know, it's the test and see how it holds up and see what their audience wants. And if they become a big player, they've got a lot of money. And, you know, again, it's part of the seismic shift from television and cable to streaming that we will be living through for the next how many years and seeing how that plays out. Like, does cable, what level does cable survive at? What level does streaming peak at? You know, when does it, you know, like, these are all things that are playing out in front of our eyes, you know, just like the football game last week, which was a very interesting test market. You know, of course that was on Peacock. It's on a lot less homes than, Netflix. I mean, the key with Netflix is Netflix is essentially in the United States and Canada, roughly the same amount of homes as cable. You know, it's within a million or two, I think. You know, Brandon might have exact numbers, but it's the same ballpark. But it's likely to skew much younger, and it's likely to, so you're going to give up, you're going to be giving up older viewers, and you're going to be increasing younger viewers, which from a, you know, it's a standpoint of WWE and television, you know, it's like that's preferable anyway.
Yeah. In terms of where USA Network, or if you even look at whatever the top cable networks are that you want to think of, USA Network, TNT, TBS, ESPN for that matter, they're all at about 70 million homes, according to Nielsen, as of December. And Netflix reported yesterday, 81 million between US and Canada. And if you just figure, well, based on the population sizes of the US and Canada, if it's even based on the sizes of their population, then the US would be at about 72 million subscribers. And I don't know if we should think about, well, how much password sharing is there? Maybe it's in even a little bit more homes than that, in a way that there isn't password sharing or, you know, unaccounted for households, when it comes to cable. So, it does look to me like, you know, Netflix has greater coverage than any cable network at this point.
Yeah, slightly, but slightly greater. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of the international scope that this comes with, Dave, I mean, what are you looking at in terms of there's now going to be a lot of international broadcasters that have been associated with WWE, and what is the space going to look like for these broadcasters? And like, a lot of this, we have to look at AEW. Like, does this help their international footprint when so much of the WWE product will be concentrated on a Netflix platform?
I would think so, because you have these stations that have historically carried WWE that will no longer be doing so. And if they have any interest in wrestling, AEW is the obvious place to go. And, you know, AEW lags greatly behind internationally from WWE. So I feel like certainly on an international basis, it helps AEW. I think even on a domestic basis, it probably helps, you know, in the sense that, well, put it this way, you know, they didn't get on WBD. That would have been a disaster for AEW. So that, which was that was the worst case scenario. And it looks like the worst case scenario for AEW is alleviated for, you know, for 10 years, really.
Do you sense that this doesn't really change your outlook in terms of the AEW rights? Like, certainly this clears the deck for WBD. Otherwise, when you're looking at it, is AEW in all that different of a position today?
With domestically. The
domestically.
Yeah, I mean, that really depends on the stations that WWE was negotiating with. And if they were to go and kind of had done like lots of work and gone, you know what, this wrestling thing isn't so bad, then could they be vying for AEW when AEW could be, you know, when AEW can legally start discussions on those things? Theoretically, yes. It doesn't, put it like, it doesn't hurt the rights negotiations. Where it hurts as WWE gets stronger financially, it hurts AEW because they'd have to pay more for talent and their popularity. You know, it's like, you know, we've seen as WWE, if popularity goes down, AEW's is going to go up generally. And as WWE's go up, AEW will suffer in the process. It doesn't always have to be that way. But traditionally in wrestling, when you're looking at like a kind of like a two-party competition, whether it's cities or regions or whatever, the usual thing is that, you know, as the dominant one gets bigger, the other one ends up going away. So in that sense, you know, long-term, could that hurt AEW, you know, ticket selling wise? Yeah, you know, but domestic rights fees, I don't think it hurts, and it could help. Yeah.
Dave, do you have any idea when the exclusive negotiating window for AEW ends? I got the impression that at least fairly recently that they were not out of the exclusive negotiating window if it had even begun. And we've seen with, I think the NBA deal, their exclusive negotiating window with their incumbents is going to be, later on, I think in March. So it looks like that there's like an exclusive negotiating period and then that ends and then you can talk to outside parties. So I'm just trying to think of like when, if they're going to talk to people other than WBD, when that could begin. I don't know if you've heard anything about that.
Yeah, I don't have a date. I just know that as of today, we haven't reached that date. You know, so like they can negotiate Ring of Honor anywhere in theory, but I don't think they're going to negotiate Ring of Honor until the WBD thing gets settled. So while they can do it legally, I don't think they're going to do it. And then the WBD thing right now, they're still in the exclusive phase. Yeah.
How do you feel about, you know, when it came to the night of the week for Raw? I mean, Nick Khan was very clear in the sense that it's Monday Night Raw for now, but that can change. And they are not married to Monday night. That'll be a decision both sides come to. In the one sense, it seems, well, that is, you've built this institution on this night of the week, but it's becoming an increasingly tough night that if you're Netflix, you don't have that history of Monday night behind you. I mean, do you lean one way or the other towards what makes sense for Raw when you are establishing it now on not just a different network, but a different platform altogether?
I mean, the institution and everything like that, I would not want to move from Monday. I know you get hit 4 months out of the year. But I think the move of date, but you know, eventually if it moves to Tuesday, fans are going to migrate and figure it out. And, but yeah, I talked to them yesterday and for now, for today, you know, I mean, there's no movement of date, but obviously like, you know, one thing that, you know, we can go back as far as if you're trying to save costs and you can work it perfectly. You know, the idea of running Monday and Tuesday, like they did before, you know, tapings Monday and Tuesday, it's just a lot more, you know, it saves money. It's easier on the executives, the people who have to go to both shows. You know, you're not flying the workers and the production people out twice a week. You do, you know, once a week, maybe they'll drive 200 miles to the next city. Monday, Tuesday, from that standpoint is beneficial. And also getting SmackDown off Friday, is very beneficial because Friday's not a great day for television, especially for cable. That said, I was told, like, as of right now for USA Network, the plan is that SmackDown's on Friday. But of course, you know, I think if they evaluate everything, I don't see why they would do that, but that is the plan as of right now. And Raw is up in the air. Yeah. You know, like Nick Khan said.
I mean, it would be fascinating, Dave, if you saw Netflix that comes at it with the arguments out there about, you know, 18 Mondays of the year that you're going up against that level of competition and you move to a Tuesday. I don't think USA Network has that aversion. SmackDown becoming a Monday night program, I don't think is maybe a launch. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility because that is the night USA Network has put so much equity into.
Yeah, I will say this. If SmackDown moves to Tuesday, if Raw moves to Tuesday, SmackDown on Monday makes all the sense in the world. And I'm sure USA would love that. It would be perfect. Yeah. It's like their history. Yeah. Yeah. And gets it off Friday. And the properties, they paid a lot for this property. You want to get the maximum thing. And yeah, you know, I mean, put it this way. I think Monday against football and Brandon, you know, you could chime in on this. I think Monday against football for USA is superior to Friday 52 weeks a year. And even during those 18 to 20 weeks a year where you're going against monster football, I think that it's still going to be better than the Friday night SmackDown rating if it was on USA. I could be wrong, but for the year, I'm pretty much positive if you go for a whole year that Monday will be far superior to Friday.
Yeah. If I had to pick between Monday and Friday, I would pick Monday, even though you have to go against the NFL. That would be so funny from a branding perspective, because if you had SmackDown on USA Network on Monday, it's Monday Night SmackDown. It's a 2-hour show. That's how you're going to get your 2-hour Raw finally, I guess.
Yeah.
Have you looked, I'm sure you will be, both of you will be breaking down the numbers, but what do you think this means for USA Network as a cable network? I mean, yes, they are retaining 2 hours of WWE programming, but their inventory is going down. Like, they are losing hours of highly viewed programming. I mean, is this going to be a minor hit to USA Network, or could it be that much more?
I think it's fairly major. It's not catastrophic. I think not having any wrestling would have been catastrophic. You know, they'll get 2 good hours, but yeah, you're going from the 2 hours on Tuesday the 2 hours on Tuesday are above what the station does outside of, Raw. And then the 3 hours of Raw, which I think, you know, unless SmackDown moves to Monday, the 3 hours of Raw are probably going to be, a little bit below what, I mean, 3 hours of SmackDown, the 3 hours of Raw are going to be ahead of what SmackDown does. So it will be a hit. And it'll be significant, but I would call it, yeah, significant. It's a significant hit, yeah.
Have either of you gotten any clear sense on why this deal is beginning January 1, 2025? And we're going to eventually get this announcement of how Q4 will shake out for Raw. But it is kind of curious that you are going to have this gap where you're going to need some Band-Aid solution, whether they do work out some short-term extension with USA, find a third party home or what happens here, but it is this odd gap in the programming schedule.
I'm under the impression that the UK and the Canada deals are going to expire at the end of this year. So that explains that. And they mentioned those two territories specifically in the press release. Maybe Latin America lines up that way too, because that gets mentioned. So you have 3 out of the 4 that expire at the right time, maybe. But the biggest one by far doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have really a good answer to that it is really interesting because if it won't be USA, I mean, they'll probably put it on streaming, but if it's on a streaming platform that isn't USA, if it's on, let's just say Peacock Live, your audience is going to be way, way down from what it was before you go to Netflix. And then if you're Peacock, do you introduce something for 3 months to hand it over to your competitor, you know? So it's like, yeah, it's a really interesting play on how this is going to go.
Yeah.
And then the focus becomes the US streaming rights for the WWE Network that are up in March of 26. And, we will have this, year plus period where you will need Peacock to follow this product. You will need Netflix to follow this product. And if you're a SmackDown consumer, you'll still need to have cable in theory, unless you're going to find alternative means to follow that. So I don't think it's an audience that is going to be too resistant that knows it does have to pay for its product, but it is these different buckets now that you are having to pay just to follow this one brand of professional wrestling. And I think streaming rights become really, really interesting when they're in such close proximity to the ESPN UFC deal being up.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, look, the ESPN UFC deal is, and whatever the UFC next, rights deals are, they're being negotiated by the same people. And that's why I think that, like, you know, it's just logical. Hey, they just made a big deal with Netflix for their sister company. Could this be something where, you know, you go with Netflix to this, but does Netflix want to be or have pay-per-view capability? Because, you know, UFC traditionally has made a ton of money on their monthly pay-per-views. You know, granted they were guaranteed by ESPN Plus, but ESPN decided that it was superior for them to still charge for the pay-per-views rather than theoretically just get your increase in subscribers from putting the pay-per-views on. And so, yeah, the UFC negotiations become even more interesting because of this deal, I think.
We did initially have you on just to talk about the fate of one Kazuchika Okada. And I mean, at least at this stage, it would seem that it is still up in the air of where this individual is going to land. Did you happen? I know it's a bit earlier on the West Coast. Did you get a chance to see the Corkin Hall match this morning with Okada?
I did not see his last match at Corkin Hall. No.
The atmosphere is incredible for this match. Like it was like a real, then he gave a big, like, you know, just broke down crying to the crowd afterward. I mean, it was quite an emotional scene that they had at Corkin Hall this morning for him and going into the final matches. But I mean, just from a standpoint, Dave, of New Japan and maximizing these last three matches, I mean, they put him over today and then vacated the title. So it wasn't as though they had him losing these belts on the way out. I mean, would this be maximized to build up to one key significant loss at the end? And like, what do you do if you are New Japan and you've got three more dates with Okada, one of which is the Tanahashi match?
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly have them lose one, but it depends. I don't know. You know, they haven't announced the Sapporo matches, have they?
No.
Yeah, so we still have two question marks. But if they vacated the trios, then they're not going to be defending the trios to lose them in Sapporo. So that, you know, that's a decision that they made over the title, and maybe they just didn't want to be predictable. I don't know. But like if you're going to have him lose once, you know, it's not the way they would do it to say throw a Yota Tsuji or Shota Umino in there. I mean, that's what I would do, is try to use that equity for one big climactic final match on the second day in Sapporo against one of your younger guys and have the upset. But, you know, that's just how I would do it.
I think that would be kind of you want to, at least short term, I think, shake things up in a dramatic way that for your audience, that is going to be losing an Ospreay, losing an Okada, that you at least give them something that is shocking to the kind of conservative booking of, you know, doing something that at least in the short term, man, we're getting something significant. And this is the guy, whoever it is that they opt to go with, if it's Umino, if it's Narita, just it's somebody.
Yeah. They need to have somebody now because they're losing. I mean, it you know, again, I don't think it'd be overemphasized how important Okada really was to New Japan. Not that they'll die without him and their touring business is what their touring business is, but it's like he's been the linchpin for 12 years. And you need, you know, I mean, you need that superstar on your show. And you've got Naito, but Naito, you know, Naito and Tanahashi are names, but they're older and they're broken down. And they need some guy who they can be, you know, still be their kind of workhorse, who can headline those big shows and singles matches, you know, year after year after year. And they got, you know, young guys that are almost ready, but they're not ready right now. But sometimes you just gotta, you know, I mean, when Tenryu left All Japan, you know, which was not as big as this, I don't think, but it was still big. You lost Tenryu, Yatsu, and Kabuki all in one swipe. I mean, it was like, okay, that's when they went with Misawa, who at this point, if you look at Misawa at that point and say Shota or Tsuji at this point, it's not as much of a difference as people think, even though they'll go crazy when I say that. But, you know, the guy stepped up and Kawada stepped up and Kobashi stepped up. And, you know, it ended up being a benefit because Baba wouldn't have, you know, it would have been years before he had made those moves to those guys if Tenryu and Yatsu and Kabuki had stayed. So it forces a change, and that could be a good thing.
it seems like there's a lot of historical examples we can look back and think about, like even, you know, late 90s WWF in terms of the older, bigger stars had gone to WCW, and that sort of forced Vince to create Austin and Rock. Do you see them actually pushing these guys to the point where it could help their business?
I mean, I think they have to. I think you have to, even if you're not even fully confident, you have to try. Because if you don't have a star, if you don't try to make a star, you're not going to have a star unless you're just lucked into an Austin, it happens. It doesn't always happen, and even Dwayne was somewhat lucked into, somewhat not. But with them, especially the way that their public is and their standing in Japan, I mean, they're not this giant company doing, 10,000 people. There's night they don't even know 1,000 people. So it's like they, and they're not on, television that reaches the kind of people that here. So it's like you've got to really try that hard to find somebody. Maybe it's two people, maybe it's three people, but you've got to go with them at the top, and you got to do it pretty quick. Cause if it's just Naito and Tanahashi, I think it's going to be real rough. Especially Tanahashi, because he really shouldn't be outside the mid card except for a couple of matches a year, I think, at this point.
And I think long term, that to me is the more pressing issue that we will only know once we can look back at how significant this is. But if this is truly clearly the WWE's view of who can be a star has never been wider than it is now. And if we're talking about Yota Tsuji, yes, this guy could be that guy, but can you bank on him being there 5 years from now? Like, will this just be the conveyor belt of a star that gets over and you have two companies that see like a Japanese star? Like, that is not a deterrent. That is somebody that can come over here and be a bigger star with our promotional backing.
I think that we've already seen with Stardom how this goes. Yeah. And the reality is it's like, and it is that when a superstar is created, you're right. That's a key point in 3 to 5 years. Look, we saw it with Ospreay. Didn't really want to leave New Japan, but economically it made no sense to stay. Okada, I think it's the same thing. It's just the economic differences, obviously for the women, it wasn't even that big, at first. It is now, but like when Io Sky or Io Shirai left, I mean, she wasn't actually leaving for more money, but it was just the idea of now she makes a lot more money, but it was more the idea of, well, I have to give it a try. It's WWE. Some of the New Japan guys don't have that mentality as strong, and some of them always will. But for them, yeah, it's the money. If you're out there and you're really strong in New Japan and you start being a draw, WWE and AEW are both going to want you. And so, yeah, you're going to have that thing where, you become the feeder league, and that's not good for the morale and mentality of the Japanese public, because they've always in their own way viewed New Japan as number one. And these other companies, yeah, they might even be more popular, but we got the best wrestlers. But if all of our best wrestlers are constantly leaving, it downgrades them. Just like in Japanese baseball was hurt when, all the top stars end up in the United States, as compared to earlier incarnations.
Before we let you go, Dave, we do have one super chat that's just coming in here. This could be a lengthy answer. We'll keep it concise. But essentially, if you're concerned about upcoming AEW attendances, do we have an updated figure for Savannah yet tonight? Have they cracked 2,000? Because that seems to be one that is precipitating.
I haven't looked since last night. But yeah, 2,000. Well, what, even if it's a little above or a little below 2,000?
1,820. The last WrestleTix count.
Oh, geez. That's not good. Well, that'd be the lowest, outside of Daly's Place that they've ever done for a Wednesday night show. Am I concerned? I'm very, very, very concerned. I spoke, just the other night. I probably went 30 minutes on it, and the AEW fans were mad because, they don't want to hear it, but it's super significant. Not just for today, but I mean, Brandon, this better than anyone. The pattern, and John, it too. The pattern when they keep going to cities is down whatever it is, 20%, each time. And if we're at like 3,000 or 2,500 and we keep this pattern, at some point, it's like, I know, like from the death of WCW and the death of the AWA and all this, when the pattern comes, and I'm not trying to say AEW is going to die or anything like that, because it's a different economic thing now. AEW is doing well in other aspects, and they've, obviously financially backed well and all that. But, those declines don't end. You know what I'm saying? It's like, It's like they, you know, it's not like, oh, well, we'll bottom out at 2000. It's like, well, you know, that doesn't happen if you keep going back and it keeps going down. I mean, I think it's something that is very, very concerning. And Tony Khan is going to know it as good as anyone, and they're going to have to make changes in what they do in some way as far as local marketing. You know, one of the big things that they've done or that they didn't do is that they haven't really done those late discounted prices that they did in the fourth quarter of last year, which got a lot of late buys for a lot of shows. They stopped that. I don't know why. They have a new guy, you know, the new COO, you know, who's, you know, this is his job. So, you know, we're going to judge him, and obviously it's way too early to judge him, but in 6 months, you know, we're going to have to look back and see if they're still doing like these 2000s on Wednesday nights. You know, that's definitely not a good thing, you know, and you can't even, I can't even say it's the product, you know, because I mean, I guess it has something to do with it, but like when I watch the TV, I don't think it's bad. I actually think it's really good, but you know, there is the question, like when you go to a Wednesday Dynamite show, you don't know who's going to be there. You know, yeah, they'll advertise matches, but you're not going to know until the last week what those are. Maybe even like this week where you don't really know the card until Saturday before Wednesday. And people make plans. You know, if you're going to go out with a whole bunch of friends on a Wednesday, you know, you're probably going to want to make plans for it a couple of weeks ahead. And if you don't know, like with Raw and SmackDown, even if you don't know the lineup, you kind of know who's going to be there, you know, weeks ahead. You know, because you're going to get almost all the big Raw stars or all the big SmackDown stars on those shows. With AEW, you don't know. And, you know, if it was working and they were doing 5,000 people a night, I would say, well, you know, it's working. It's fine. But it's not. And so now we got to figure out what to do. What do you do to make it work?
Yeah, I think to the extent some of it's out of their hands, when WWE's better and people are more satisfied with it, the need for an alternative is lesser.
Yeah.
If we could touch on The Rock briefly. The newest member of the TKO board of directors. I was just thinking something we didn't talk about yesterday when John and I were talking is that, so he's got all of his IP now, all of the Rock IP is his, name and catchphrases and things like that. He got a $30 million equity, reward for coming on the board. And I was thinking, like, if I were a TKO investor, which I'm not, why give him his IP? Why give him the $30 million award? Like, what value is he adding that's so far in excess of what a typical new member of the board of directors would add? He's clearly qualified to be on the board, but that seems like a big, you know, why, you know, if I hold stock, why am I okay with you're giving IP away here and you're giving a lot of money away?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I think that that's probably demands that he made. You know, he knows where he's coming from too. And obviously it tells you they wanted him aboard, badly. And
it looks like a little bit of a conflict with the relationship where Ari has been his representative, or Endeavor at least has been his representative for many years.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, so, yeah, he's his representative. It is kind of that is really interesting. But yeah, I mean, he's wanted that Rock name, to market on his own, you know, probably for 20 years now, but, yeah, I mean, it's, he got a sweetheart of a deal, but maybe they feel it's worth it. You know, if he's going to do matches from time to time or appear on TV, you know, I presume he's going to appear on TV more often than before. And, you know, he's a, you know, and perhaps that helped, perhaps the idea helped in the negotiations with Netflix. It's like, hey, we can deliver Dwayne Johnson on this show X number of times a year. You know, that means a lot more than any other name that they could put on there, you know, and say, oh, we're going to deliver CM Punk, you know, which is probably the second biggest name. That's not going to mean anything compared to Dwayne Johnson. We're going to deliver Seth Rollins every single week. It ain't going to mean the same thing.
Well, Dave, we appreciate you very much taking all this time to chat with us. Of course, you can follow all of this news in this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter that will be dropping on Friday over at WrestlingObserver.com. Thank you very much, Dave. I'm sure we'll be chatting soon.
Okay, great to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. Dave Meltzer, everyone. A very busy man, as you could hear at the beginning there. But yeah, it was, yeah. What did you think overall just of The Rock and his, like, he was a very big part of this public presentation on Tuesday, being front and center at the New York Stock Exchange doing the media rounds. And would you anticipate, like, this is not going to be just a quiet board member. Like, this is going to be, I would say, like, very much one of their front-facing figures for a lot of reasons that Dave just outlined there. I mean, this is This is going to be the most significant independent board member that they have had in terms of what they can extract from his celebrity.
Yeah. And he's a great personality. He's a huge star. He's clearly got a past with the company and I guess to an extent he's currently working with the company. But yeah, another thing, he was not just at the stock exchange. I was told he was brought down to headquarters too, came out to his music and slapped hands with employees and things like that yesterday. So, really there to hype everybody up.
George Barrios never got that kind of treatment, did he?
I don't think so. And I was thinking like, and not, I don't want to be too cynical, but like to think about the Netflix deal and the details of it in terms of the monetary value. It's maybe, or I think it's, maybe early years of this 10-year term, maybe it's a down deal compared to what it's eating up. Maybe further on, it's an up deal. And it's just, you know, it's a little too complicated for most people to figure out the step up. And you preceded it with, oh my God, Dwayne Johnson, one of the biggest Hollywood movie stars, is part of our board. In terms of a PR strategy, it's made what could be recognized as a disappointing deal less disappointing. Although, yes, the Netflix brand and the Netflix reach is a good thing.
Would you interpret yesterday as somewhat a lot of this being baked in, that over time people are like investors are going to kind of slice this up more and get to that conclusion? Or do you feel
I guess
that
I was thinking, but like they're not going to figure that out until 2025 when this money starts getting paid. You know, we're not going to know until like May 2025 when we get the Q1 report that like, you know, oh, we'll see if W's media segment is down, right?
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately it was, they got the reaction they wanted from the stock. I mean, publicly, I mean, this has been trumpeted as like a gigantic win for both sides. I think for Netflix, this is an incredible deal for just the length of time that they've got, that in the grand scheme of things, like, yes, it's a staggering number to some people, but when you break it off over so many years and it's Netflix, like not a whole lot of risk involved on their end either. That, I mean, you know, the utter catastrophe is, you have an opt out in 5 years, which I don't think anyone thinks will be exercised, but they do have an exit strategy too built into this. And if the absolute worst case scenario occurs.
Right. Or it could go 20 years. But as we talked about yesterday, this is a long deal, potentially 10 years. It's probably going to be 10 years. I know there's a question in the chat. I don't think there's any ambiguity. TKO has disclosed this themselves, that this is a 10-year deal with Netflix has the option to cancel it after 5. And they have the option at the 10-year mark or whenever, I guess, to extend it to 20 years. And there's everybody's on the same page about that. But yeah, it's a long-term deal that tells me, you know, you're probably not that optimistic about the future of the rights market if you're willing to say, I'm not going to shop this property for 10 years and I'm going to let you decide whether I'm going to shop it for 20 years.
Yes.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Just on the Canadian front, that I know everybody is just,
yes, people are waiting
to get to it. The 38 minute mark of the show. There was some confusion this morning because I was getting messaged by many concerned people because on people's programming guides, Saturday night, 8 p.m. did not list the Royal Rumble. Instead,
really?
A takeover was listed and everyone was very worried about this. I was told, that it is business as usual. Royal Rumble will air. They're not moving it to pay-per-view or anything.
Or Netflix. It's not going to be on Netflix, right?
It's not going to be on Netflix. It will be like every other premium live event. The length of the deal, the Canadian rights, it does go until the end of the year. That's when the contract is to end in Canada as well. But then everything will be moving to Netflix. That is like everything, including the premium live events. Like, this is not to decipher from the US model, which will remain, the premium live events will remain on Peacock till at least March of 2026.
Yeah. And So the biggest deals are what? U.S. number one, obviously. Number two, India. And as we were discussing it yesterday, ambiguity about whether India is included in this immediately or not. And I know Nikon said to Bloomberg yesterday that India is not included in this deal. I was told by somebody that it does include India. And I'm guessing maybe we could interpret what Nikon said there as it doesn't include India right now. I believe the India deal expires at the end of 2026. So
okay,
maybe it's going to roll over at that point. So yes, those are Canada, US, India, probably UK and Canada, roughly tied.
Did you tune into the Netflix earnings call on Tuesday?
I sure did. I listened to Ted Sarandos. This is an unusual earnings call, isn't it?
It is. It's more so like you have your moderator that is just, you might as well have like a fireside chat. I mean, they should just have the fire going with like
there should be a fireplace. Yes.
And they take investors' questions. The investors don't get to, or the analysts, no, I should say, don't get to ask the questions themselves. Instead, you submit them. And then this moderator sends it in a very nice tone and asks the questions. And Ted Sarandos would not get, we don't talk about specifics of any deal, and made a big point that this is not sports we're getting into. This is sports entertainment. That's our sweet spot.
Right. Just like they're not getting into advertising. So it's obviously not Netflix has been a great business. It's hard to take these big strategic declarations that they give, you know, at face value when they do seem to change their mind or do things that they said they wouldn't do.
Yeah. They had a phenomenal day. They beat the predictions by adding over 13 million new subscribers for Q4, which now takes their worldwide total to 260.8. And the US number is what, around 72 in that ballpark?
I think it's about 72. They disclose US and Canada is all one package, and that's at 81, I believe, 81 million.
Yes. So a cool net income of 937.8 million for the quarter and a revenue of 8.8 billion. So yeah, Netflix is doing all right. We do have another super chat we'll get to in a second, but I also wanted to bring up this. The research firm Antenna is estimating that Peacock added 2.8 million signups for the NFL wildcard game a couple of weekends ago for the Kansas City Chiefs and Miami Dolphins. So the end of 2023, Peacock was at roughly 30 million subscribers. So in theory, this would be in the ballpark of 33 million subs that they have going into this Royal Rumble weekend, which I am sure there is going to be some benefit to Royal Rumble having, you know, just occurring on the calendar several weeks after this game when people, regardless of what the churn is, they do have access to Peacock for a month. And this is the kind of event that if a really super lapsed fan might watch one show a year, the Royal Rumble would be probably at the top of that list, if not number two.
Yeah, so it should be the most watched Royal Rumble ever. So what do you think about that number then? So they were at 28 in Q3. We've just started earnings season since Netflix just reported. So we'll get an update from Comcast soon. So if they're going from 28 to what did they gain? 2.8 million?
So 2.8 million.
So they're probably just over 30. I think we spoke last time to hold ourselves accountable, and I think we agreed that 35 would be pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit under what, at least at that time, we thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I was saying like could they hit 40? So definitely below that that scale of 35 to 40. But nonetheless, I mean ultimately this will be judged in different ways ultimately of how many stick with Peacock after this. I don't expect 2.8 million people to just drop their service after 30 days. So they'll get something out of this, but I mean, you will need like meaningful events on a consistent basis, I think, to continue to grow this as opposed to one big game of the year. And you're only going to have so many things that have the power of an NFL playoff game that's going to have that level of attachment to it.
Yes. So another thing that occurred to me, which will be relevant to people in Canada and the UK, at least for starters, is that it's clear you're going to get PLEs on Netflix. It's not clear how much of the library is going to be there. And I know there are some people who have WWE library anxiety about, just as we did here in the United States, when, you know, everything was moving over to Peacock and there were people just throwing their hands in the air about how they're never going to see.
There's no way I'm going to see Mid-South on Peacock. There's no
way.
They're
not going to put, you think they're going to put Bill Watts's Mid-South on Peacock? They're going to put Fritz Von Erich's World Class on Peacock, and they did. Peacock, I don't know. The interface just seems like a lot more stuff going on. I'm probably underestimating it to think that Netflix won't be able to build a WWE section just as Peacock has.
I think that this is one area where this is a fan base that if there is a consistency, Brandon, of some of the individuals that are like wrestling adjacent in these industries that sometimes we'll speak to, their opinion of the fan base, they're very polite, but this is a rabid fan base. I mean, chased.
They're very passionate.
Showbuzz Daily signed off. I mean, they made a point to shout out the wrestling fans out there. So I would say for Netflix is they are entering this unique space that they may or may not know the level of fandom that is attached to it. This would certainly be the make good to make this audience as welcome as possible to absorb as much of the WWE network as possible. But you're right. It is not a guarantee. And that would be among my questions if we were able to ask. And it's probably under that bucket of, we don't know at this point when you're 10 and a half months out of the specifics and if they will carve out their own sort of WWE tile within Netflix that can take people into the archives.
Right. I guess if Peacock can do it, if NBC Universal can do it, I don't see why Netflix wouldn't be able to. By that, I mean, Netflix is a stronger tech company. It has a stronger tech background than NBC or Comcast does, at least when it comes to streaming. I would think so. If they can do it, why couldn't Netflix do it?
If this was the NFL strategy, Netflix gets all the new stuff, and then we'll take the library. We're going to sell it off. So you got to buy another thing to get the library. I mean, let's just monetize everything. Yeah. I mean, that library will exist in some form or fashion. Where, when, and for how much, all remains to be seen. But there you have it. The latest on the Netflix front. Are you ready for a question about state of the media, Brandon? Are you in the mood for a state of the media?
How much time do we have?
We'll make this one quick.
Okay.
MJ is the one that sends in the super chat. Given your roles in the media, what do the three of you think about Hunter's statement from July of 2023 that 75%, very specific percentage that Hunter had, of reported sources say speculation is not true online, yet that stuff dominates discourses? That exact number that Hunter has, he has carefully combed through every single report. He busted out his true or untrue marker and got a percentage and was able to ascertain exactly what is true and what is not true on the internet.
I think there are credible places to listen to and there are less credible places to listen to. I think it's easy to also conflate the hysterical and insane conversations that you see around wrestling news from fans, and the speculation that you'll get from fans, and to apply that to that's what the wrestling media is doing. And everybody in the wrestling media is the same, of course. So we're all in one bucket and we're all
in a group text.
Yes. But I think there is a lot of conflation of, like, you know, because there's one bad source or there's a conversation happening where people are speculating about rumors and things that at least you and I would not report, that is how everything is. I think it's in Paul Levesque's kind of defensive interest to discount any sort of media that could be credible and scrutinize WWE and their choices and conduct. So I think that is a hyperbole on his part.
It is. We're talking about professional wrestling here, but I just think in a grander sense, when you sort of take the legitimacy away from an entity that just becomes the media, which can be a bad word to many people, I think that it is to what Brandon is stating here. I mean, that is to your benefit if you have a agency like media that is there to essentially inform you, the consumer, about what is happening, what is going on as a neutral party, that is not always to the benefit of the business or the company you are covering. So if that business or company can delegitimize you, that is of great benefit to them that they can control the discourse of news, and that even if there is something negative to report, well, it's coming from the biased media, and therefore you can you're giving a lot of power in that sense. And I understand that the media, it's going to be a wide range of what people's opinions are, but I think it's always dangerous when you just group everybody together with the same brush, because you can always find good reporters, bad reporters in between. I think generally, I will certainly speak for Brandon as one of the best that is out there when it comes to the carefulness. And we hear lots of things that it is not just simply that we are just parrots that are going to report what one person tells us without trying to fact check, to get multiple sources on something, to be as concrete when we share info with you that we can. And for those that, I'm going on a rant here, I understand. I'll wrap up
that's
in a second.
That's a good one. Keep going.
For those that lament the quote unquote sources say, I can almost guarantee you that myself and Brandon have probably never gone to a source and said, hey, can you please not identify yourself when we report something? Can you please tell us something off the record as opposed to on the record? We crave transparency. We would love if all of these people had the ability to speak on the record. This is not an industry where you are going to find too many people putting their hand up and wanting to attach a name to information. So you, as the consumer, would you rather not be informed unless someone attaches their name? Because a lot of important things are then not going to be discussed. And that is the value judgment you need to make as well of what you want out of your wrestling media as well. Not saying it's perfect, but don't get on the reporters when it is officials or individuals that are not going to go on the record. And the things that people will not go on the record for, I mean, it is comical at times of like how close-knit and guarded information is when it comes to the fear of being attached to a news item if you are someone that works in the industry. And that's just the way it operates. And that does not mean we just shut down and don't report things.
And for what are to me irrational reasons, which are only supported by like a tragedy of the commons, and that, well, nobody else does it, so if I do it, I'm at risk. But I think, and let's not pretend like the wrestling media are full of people who highly prioritize transparency and accuracy. We have all different kinds of goals and just people who are, I think, are just kind of indifferent to those priorities. I hope that we're doing something that is prioritizing transparency and accuracy. And I think that there's, when it comes to, if we're talking about things that are being told to reporters on background, I think there is, you know, there's an anonymity in that. And I think wrestling reporters could do a better job of describing what their sources are while keeping them anonymous. And I think there's a risk of a reporter being given something and then being willing to report it, whereas maybe you and I would be more conservative and would want to get a second source, or would prefer this thing be reported on the record. Whereas somebody who's not as discerning or not as conservative about that, you know, gets that information, and then because they were willing to do that, get more and more information and report more things like that. So by it's sort of the feedback loop just sort of perpetuates itself like that.
I appreciate the question. Whenever we get to talk about this,
we can talk about it for another hour.
Yeah, we could keep going here. But were there any other topics you wanted to hit on? What do you imagine the WWE version of Drive to Survive could look like if we see such a show develop that Nick Khan hinted at on Bloomberg News?
Tough enough. I mean, we've been there, haven't we? AEW All Access, wasn't that a good show? You like that, right?
No. I did not enjoy that show. The elephant in the room, that's what I think that show was called.
Yeah, I mean, especially in wrestling, there's things that people want to protect, especially in that case, in the case of AEW, where the issue is CM Punk and nobody could talk about CM Punk. But I mean, in wrestling, there is, I feel like this is an extension of the earlier conversation we were just having, there's this compulsion to protect things and not really say things. And I don't know how wrestling can tell, you know, can connect with an audience, maybe the way the Drive to Survive connected with an audience, without letting that guard down.
The last item I did want to bring up is Vice TV just officially announced the return of Dark Side of the Ring for its fifth season. It'll come back Tuesday, March the 5th, with 10 episodes. Topics will include Gentleman Chris Adams, Sensational Sherry, Terry Bam Bam Gordy, Black Saturday from 1984, Chris Colt, The Sandman, Earthquake, John Tenta, Harley Race, Buff Bagwell, and Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Okay.
Any jump out at you? Any that you are like, wow, can't wait?
Buff,
Chris
Buff
Colt
Bagwell
is an interesting one. Like, that is a, that's certainly one where they are going deep there for an audience that I would say a lot of.
There must be a story there. I don't even recognize that name.
Oh, Chris Colt, there's definitely a story with Chris Colt that is worth telling. They're not afraid to usually go into like a really like obscure topic. I would say Chris Colt would be the most for this audience as well. Black Saturday could be a very interesting one as well. But there you go. That's coming back on March the 5th.
Will they interview Ole Anderson for Black Saturday?
I don't think Ole Anderson is up for any sit-down interviews at this time. But yeah, that was, I mean, that was the, Ole Anderson was totally blindsided by that deal, you know, the Briscoes going to Vince McMahon. And then Ole tried to take them to court and delayed it. That would have happened in April, and they delayed it until July when essentially, you know, he was just blindsided and they sold out Ole Anderson.
Yes. Ron Hutchison would be available for a Black Saturday interview.
Ron Hutchison is the trivia note of the first involved in the first match on that broadcast of July of 1984. Maybe that will be a guest that we get.
I think we could land him.
We all sat together at Forbidden Door 2.
That's right.
Back in June. Yes. All right. Well, on that note, we are going to be wrapping things up. So we have two episodes this week. So if you didn't catch Tuesday's breaking news, we provided a ton of reaction and detail on the WWE to Netflix deal, including some of the comments made by Ari Emanuel and Nick Khan as they were doing the media rounds. It was a very busy day on the TKO front. And Brandon, I'm sure you'll be going more into this on Sunday as you sit down and come at this from all angles. I want to highly recommend people go to WrestleNomics.com to see the financial breakdown that Brandon did that I think is a really excellent breakdown of kind of the finances and getting to a more understanding of this deal and where all the different revenue streams are coming from and what this deal means from a domestic standpoint and the, of course, overall impact that the Netflix deal will have. So there you have it, as you viewers can see right now.
If you want to check my math, go for it. That and that's free for everybody. The two reports that I did yesterday are free for everybody and ad free. And I will be in Tampa this Saturday. So probably be doing a WrestleNomics radio podcast for subscribers somewhere, either in Tampa before I leave or later on when I'm back home in the evening. So I will relay my experience.
Yes, and tentatively, we're hopeful of having Brandon join us on the Royal Rumble review Saturday night. If everything is in alignment, Brandon will be going to the press conference afterward, and then hopefully we'll still be on the air, and we can have Brandon on to chat about the press conference and anything else that goes down at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, it shouldn't be too bad, because the W press conference is assuming I attended. I mean, I don't know for 100% that I'll be there, but if I'm there, those don't last too long, and I'm not too far from the arena, so do my best to make it.
All right. Well, we look forward to that. Safe travels this weekend. And that is going to wrap it up. So you can tune into Rewind and Dynamite tonight as myself and Wei Ting will be talking, I'm sure, more about this and plenty to come this week. So go check out WrestleNomics.com, PostWrestling.com. And you know what? I think, you know, we typically kick off the show with him. And I think that the best way to sign off is with the words of one man.
And to all a good night. That's it.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.